Calendar is the State of Nevada versus Second Judicial District Court of the State of Nevada. If counsel is ready to proceed, please do so. And if you wish to reserve time, please so state.
Thanks. Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. I'm Terry McCarthy from the Washoe County District Attorney's Office. And yes, I would like to reserve a couple of moments if the court would allow. 2 minutes, I'll do it. And with me today is Rebecca Druckmann. Because I couldn't find my way to a specialty court with both hands and a map. I've never been there. She lives there. And so I thought it possible that this court would have questions that I frankly couldn't answer. So I brought my resource with me. If there's no such questions, I'll just handle it myself. So this is a petition for writ. I don't think it matters much which kind, mandamus or prohibition. What the real party in interest is a veteran of the military services of the United States. He purports to have a mental illness related to that service. The state does not dispute that. He was accused of battery by a prisoner. I think we can agree that is a crime of violence, both in fact and by its elements. When it came time for sentencing, he asked to be transferred to the Veterans Court, a specialty court established by statute. Not as a condition of probation. That is not what he sought. He sought transfer in a method that, if he is successful, will avoid the conviction entirely. The statutory scheme, I'm sorry, I thought somebody started to say something. The statutory scheme clearly requires the consent of the prosecutor for that, when there's a violent crime and for transfer to the Veterans Court. The prosecutor did not agree in this case, and Judge Steinmeier said, I'm doing it anyway. She found that the requirement of the prosecutor's agreement violated the state constitution. Separation of powers clause, and that therefore it couldn't be enforced. And also, I think there was some discussion of severance as well. And so we sought this writ, because it's the only way we have to get a ruling.
Okay, Mr. McCarthy, it was my understanding, please correct me if I'm wrong, is that the officer who was the victim of this battery had no objection to Mr. Hearn going into the Veterans Court. Was that made part of the record?
I don't know if it was made part of the record or not. I wouldn't be at all surprised.
Okay.
There's even among the executive branch, there are often disputes about when an arrest should be made, when someone should be prosecuted.
I understand that, and I understand your legal argument. I think the point, I know Justice Douglas and I are co-chair of the Specialty Court Funding Committee, so we're quite involved in it. And I think the idea is to get more people into these specialty courts to try and get their lives turned around and keep them out of prison and save the taxpayers money and Washoe County money and all that. And so tell us, your legal argument, I guess, is that Judge Steinmeier shouldn't be interfering with the statute. That's up to the legislature. Is that the gist of it?
Then? That's basically it. She was in. By the way, I don't dispute the laudable goals of the specialty courts. I think they are just fine. I'm a vet myself. Hopefully, I don't need the services of the Veterans Court. But who knows? Anyway. When the legislature required the participation in this decision by the prosecution, did that violate some clause of the state constitution? That is the only question. We also agree on this much. If this case were in California, I lose. If this case was brought in the United States courts, I win. The question, though, is what do we do with the Nevada Constitution?
So how do you get, Mr. McCarthy, in that vein, how do you deal with Stromberg, which relied in large part upon the California courts in interpreting these provisions?
Well, Stromberg is easy to distinguish on the facts because Stromberg was not going to result in a dismissal. It is going to result in an imposition of a sentence within the range allowed by the legislature. That's all.
Well, the legislature contemplates a dismissal in this under this statute, too.
That's certainly not a sentence.
I'm sorry?
That is not a sentence. Dismissal is not a sentence. The court has the absolute authority to impose a sentence. We're talking about the premature ending of criminal prosecution without resolution, without finding, without conviction or an acquittal, just because. That is not a role that is properly ascribed to the judiciary. It is properly ascribed to the executive branch. Justice Cherry, this is for you. When you were a public defender and you had a case and you really want to avoid the conviction because he's a good guy and he's a vet and all that, what'd you go through? You don't go see the judge in chambers. You go to the prosecutor.
That was grips, you know.
And a young fellow of my acquaintance found himself with a cup of beer in a red Solo cup down by the river. Who knew that was against the law? And that required a chat with the city attorney. Not the city judge, the city attorney. Because that's who makes that decision on whether it should go forward at all. If it goes forward, then the judge can decide what sentence he should. But this is not about a sentence. This is about dismissal. If the judge can dismiss simply because a person has participated in this program without the agreement of the prosecutor, then a judge can dismiss any case.
But the judge can do that. According to the statute, the judge can dismiss if they participate successfully in the program. You forget about the violent piece. They do that in other drug court statutes.
Yes. This legislation that grants that authority says that the prosecutor has to be a part of that decision. The question is that permissible? Can the legislature grant that authority to the prosecutor, or must it be reserved exclusively to the judiciary? You know, in I went and I looked up the California separation of powers clause, and it is not the same as ours. Okay? There are some similarities, but it is different. One of the things that is different is ours talks about roles that are properly assigned to each of the branches of government. That language doesn't appear in the California version. So I don't think we ought to follow the California version. I think we do too many things where there is carriage. The advising the legislature, is that a traditional role of the judiciary? I don't know. I read something this morning about judicial selection committee. Is that a traditional role of the judiciary? I don't know. But I'm not going to contend that you can't do it. The question is the statute prohibitive? It's not whether it is wise, whether another statute would also be allowed, but whether this particular statute is prohibitive. I say it is not. The legislature can say the prosecutor can have a role in this particular decision, because it is the type of decision that is reserved, usually, to the prosecutor. The prosecutor in that case with the red Solo cup full of beer, he decides, does this go to a conviction, or does this one end up with a $50 contribution to the animal shelter?
And sir, do you distinguish between those conversations with the prosecutor at a pre-plea level to having the prosecutor weigh in post-plea? Once there's been an entry, you know, a plea of guilty, I mean, that's a line of demarcation that may have some significance or not, if you can talk to me about that.
I think the prosecutor's authority to dismiss, to simply change his mind and say, no, we don't wish to go forward, that remains up until the point the sentence is imposed. We can call it a no prosecute or any of a half dozen other terms, but that authority remains.
I don't know, Mr. McCarthy. I think I disagree with you, not without getting into the legal state. I agree with Justice Stiglitz in the sense that the guilty plea puts it into the judge's realm, then like that. The prosecutor certainly has a right to argue for no drug court or for prison or whatever. You always do that. But ultimately, it looks like it's the judge that exercises that discretion whether or not to allow the specialty court. And my only other comment, there's times when statutes conflict with rules of civil procedure, and we've held if it's a procedural matter, it's the rules trump the statute, you know, like that. I don't know if that's even applicable in this case because it's not really, that's not the issue, but I am concerned about it, you know.
I am concerned about the notion that the court and only the court can dismiss. If it's true that there is a line of demarcation, and once a plea is entered, the prosecutor no longer has the ability to change his mind and say,
could I follow up on that point in a different context? At least when I was sitting in for Judge Breen in drug court years and years ago, my memory is that drug court referral did not, by statute, require prosecutorial approval.
Right. I believe that's true. There are several different schemes. There's mental health court, drug court.
Right. And isn't it also true that the successful completion of drug court results in the dismissal of the action?
There may be a time when we talk about that, too. Although, I said, we like laudable rules, but this particular legislation said that the state can be a participant.
Uh-huh.
I don't see any reason why the legislature could not allow that authority to the prosecutor.
What I don't remember is whether, as a condition to entering into drug court, the defendant had to enter a plea of guilty. I seem to recall they did, but I'm not certain about that. Do you remember, or forgetting what was taking place 18 years ago, what about the current practice?
I don't know. I
they require.
Ms. Druckmann is here.
And, yes.
I knew this was going to happen.
In general, there's three ways they can come into drug court. They can come via stipulation. Then only they enter a plea and they come in. And then there's 458 and 453.
Right.
And in each of those cases, they've entered a plea, which then the case is dismissed prior to. Once they complete it, it's
But the point is that in all three instances, they're entering a plea.
I can tell you honestly that there are cases presently in our drug court where there's a stipulation between the parties and they don't actually enter a plea. It's a lot. It's far more unusual now than it was, you know, 10 years ago.
That's still a controversy, though, because I know as an aide to just a district, a lot of times we just sent the person to drug court. Jack Layman, who invented drug court in Nevada, allowed it. He didn't have a problem with that.
Sure.
Of course, I haven't been there in years, so I don't know.
The plea.
Whether people do it or don't, the statute requires
a
plea.
I think most of the times that we are seeing them come under stipulation.
But what? Okay, 176A.290 requires a plea of guilty. Correct or not?
Okay. So that's the case of the Veterans Court. And
correct.
The answer is yes.
You must plead guilty.
Yeah. Right. And there's several different statutory schemes.
But our statutory scheme is a deferred entry of judgment scheme. You don't have a right to a pre-trial drug diversion, a pre-plea drug diversion under a statute. If I'm wrong, correct me and show me what statute we're talking about.
I believe you're correct, but there is no judgment.
Correct, but they enter a plea of guilty, and then it goes over to what's going to happen at a time of sentencing.
There is no sentencing.
Well, because it'll be dismissed.
Right. That's the problem. So the question is not, does the district court have authority, statutory authority, to dismiss under certain circumstances? Of course the judge could dismiss under specified circumstances. The question is that the only way that these can be structured, these schemes can be structured in Nevada? And the answer is no.
And Mr. McCarthy?
With you had indicated that the state could do this, more importantly, the legislature could impose this. And that's where we have a kind of a separation of powers argument coming into play, is whether or not by mandating from the district attorney's office that the court do a certain thing, you have one branch, in essence, stepping on the toes of another branch, which is in violation of the state constitution. Now, they could request it, but the court considers it with sentencing. So what is your response?
My response is this decision could go exclusively to the executive branch if the legislature wanted to. The legislature could say, requires the prosecutor.
The point is, the legislature can say a lot of things, but are they overstepping their constitutional bounds?
Well, I thought I was answering that, but I think the legislature, consistent with the Constitution, could give the prosecutor the authority to enter into agreements that would result in dismissal. The legislature, consistent with the separation of powers clause, may also sometimes give the court the authority to take action that ultimately results in a dismissal. The only question is, does the Constitution prohibit any sharing of that responsibility? And the answer, I think, is clear that there is no such prohibition. There would be in California, there would not be under the United States Constitution, and there ought not to be such a prohibition in Nevada.
Mr. McCarthy, you're out of time. I'm going to give you 2 minutes of rebuttal. I'm going to give the parties on the other side an additional 2 minutes in their argument.
Good morning, Chief Justice Douglas, Justices. May it please the court. My name is Kendra Birchie, and I, along with John Petty, represent the respondent, the real party in interest, Matthew Current. The issues before the court today are whether NRS 176A.260 subsection 2 is unconstitutional and whether the offending language is severable. The veto provision of the district attorney in this case violates the separation of powers by improperly allowing the executive branch to usurp the sentencing discretion of the sentencing court, the district court. In this case, we are requesting for this court to affirm the district court's ruling that the veteran court statute, specifically the veto provision of the district attorney, is unconstitutional. We are requesting the court to follow the rulings and the Stromberg and the analytical frameworks set forth in the California cases in determining that this statute, that the veterans court provision for the district attorney veto provision is unconstitutional based on three key issues. First, that the district attorney's office has no set guidelines in determining when or when to not exercise that veto power. That the veto power itself, as we've indicated, violates the separation of powers by invading in the discretion of the court. And that if the language is not included, that of the veto provision, that everything in the legislative intent may still remain void. If I may first respond briefly to one of the questions that was addressed was whether or not the named victim in this case was in agreement with diversion, whether that was in the record. That's located on page 28 of the provided materials, where Deputy Cook in this case did indicate that he was in agreement with Mr. Hearn entering into the Veterans Court and receiving the diversion. Additionally, there's questions regarding whether or not an individual who is participating in drug court could enter into drug court pre-plea as a practicing felony attorney in the Second Judicial Court. I am not aware of any provision or any time when a person is allowed to enter into drug court prior to plea. What's been occurring is that in some cases, by stipulation of both parties at plea, after the person's entered the plea, then that individual would be allowed to participate in district court. So I disagree.
So everybody who enters drug court in Reno pleads guilty?
Yes, Your Honor. That is my understanding, that in order to be eligible to participate in the specialty court of drug court, they must plead guilty. There's been some, originally had been just at sentencing when they would be entering into the drug court program. However, I believe it's a pilot program where they're if there's a stipulation of both parties that they're entering after they've entered a guilty plea. Regarding my first request for why this court should find that Stromberg should be followed and that the veto provision violates the separation of power, regarding the fact that the district attorney's office has absolutely no guidelines as to when they should or should not be stipulating to allow an individual into the veterans court statute or into the veterans court program.
Well, the issue of having guidelines would be separate than the issue of having veto power.
Yes, Your Honor. And that's one of the reasons why the veto power violates the separation of powers, because by improperly allowing the executive branch to usurp the powers of the district court. That's one of the reasons why it's important for the district court to have the discretion, is because there's a review. What we have here is that we have District Attorney A, who may decide based on these facts that this veteran should be allowed into the program, where District Attorney B wouldn't allow for it. And there's no review, and there's no ability for the defense to have the district attorney put on the record their reasons for why they're not allowing the veteran into the program. It's just a complete bar. And then the district court doesn't have any ability to then allow that person into the program.
Ms. Burchy, under if a defendant is eligible for a veterans court, does the district court judge, after the entry of plea, possess discretion under the statute to deny the referral?
Yes, Your Honor. If
forgetting the veto power question, just by statute, this is still a discretionary decision by the judge after the plea is entered.
Yes, Your Honor. And that sentence
so again. So the judge could, looking at this defendant, say, you're qualified, but I'm not referring you.
Yes, Your Honor. And that would be after the district attorney would have the opportunity to listen to the prosecution, hear their arguments, listen to the defense, hear their arguments.
I'm saying even in a case, there's one set of cases where the defendant is eligible and would get the transfer, but that transfer is still discretionary.
That is correct, Your Honor. It is
absolutely. In the plea agreement for a veteran? That he or she may not go to veterans court when they're pleading guilty, thinking they're going to go to veterans court?
Yes, Your Honor. And that occurred in this case as well, where the district attorney, or I apologize, the district court, as that's part of the canvas, is it's, does this individual realize that the sentencing, regardless of the plea, regardless of anything being offered, regardless of negotiations, it is up to the discretion of the district court whether or not what the sentence would be imposed.
Well, now we have, I believe, that under the last legislature, we have binding plea agreements so that the judge would have to send the person to Veterans Court, or I may be all wet on this, have to send the person to Veterans Court, otherwise he or she can withdraw the plea.
But I believe that that's under specific guidelines, and that's not at issue in this case specifically, since that provision hadn't been enacted, the legislation had been enacted. What we have here is that we have an individual who entered a guilty plea, and at the stage of the guilty plea indicated that he would be requesting Veterans Court, and then we argued and requested for Veterans Court to be considered.
And Ms. Burchy, just so the record's clear, in terms of statutory requirements and the way that it plays out, they enter a plea of guilty. At the time of sentencing, the court makes a determination of whether or not they're going to defer entry of judgment and send the person to Veterans Court or whatever applicable court. That's a matter that happens at the time of sentencing. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. And I'm unaware of any instances where it's occurred. Otherwise, I don't know if that's something that's...
Okay. I'm just saying on this record and on the statutory scheme as you understand it, that is the scheme. You plead at the time of sentencing. The court makes a determination according to statute whether they're going to defer entry of judgment or they're going to complete the sentence at that time.
I'm confused. If somebody enters a plea to go to Veterans Court, and it's going to be up to the judge as to whether they go to Veterans Court, where do they go waiting for sentencing? And how long does it take to do a pre-sentence report? Or do you waive it? What's happening? I haven't been in the district court for 12 years. So I know that having practiced criminal law for almost my whole career, I can't believe that the process would send somebody back to Washoe County Jail waiting to see if the judge is going to send a person to a specialty court. Is that how you do it in Reno?
Your Honor, and I believe that this court can find that in the record in this case, where the defendant, Mr. Hearn, did remain in Washoe County Jail up until the sentencing while we were waiting for the pre-sentence investigation.
I wonder if my colleagues who give money to specialty court know that that's what happens. Well, we're trying to save money for jails by sending somebody to jail when in the long run they're going to go to veterans court or drug court or mental health court.
Ms. Burchin, I'm sorry. I just want to be clear. 176A, 290, if the judge decides to do that, the judge suspends further proceedings and places the defendant on probation. Is that correct? According to the statute. And those conditions include attendance and successful completion of veterans court.
That is correct.
So this is not an untethered dismissal. They are essentially put on probation.
Correct, Your Honor. And if the individual is unsuccessful, then they would not be granted the diversion. And then a sentence of potentially a prison sentence would be imposed depending on what had occurred.
It's not that they would not be granted diversion. They would already be on diversion. It's that they would not be granted dismissal, and they'd be returned to the ordinary process for sentencing. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Well, but under the statute, the decision about whether to send the individual to veterans court is still discretionary in the judge. So if the judge gets the PSI, even though the plea agreement suggests that the defendant would be eligible for veterans court and the parties want the defendant to go to veterans court, the judge can still sentence the defendant for the crime charged, which would include prison.
That is correct, Your Honor, except if the district attorney is not stipulating at this point and it's a violent offense, then
all I'm trying to do is focus on the first part of the statute, which is if it's the defendant is eligible and we're dealing with a nonviolent offense, even in the case of a nonviolent offense, the decision about whether to send the defendant to veterans court is still discretionary in the judge after the plea.
That is correct, Your Honor. Okay. And that is our argument as to why that this veto provision is severable. Because if you remove the offending language of the veto power, which would include that the court may not assign the veteran into veterans court unless the district attorney were to stipulate.
But what concerns me, and I'd like you to address this, and it maybe comes up in your severability argument, is that the district court only severed the portions dealing with the veto power, which, if that's all that's severed, that means that any individual who commits a violent offense and otherwise qualifies is not eligible for veterans court, period, by statute. Certainly the legislature did not intend that.
And Your Honor, yes, I'll address that now. We believe that it was a clerical error in the way that the district court issued that ruling regarding the severance. We believe that the district court should have, and what our argument was, is that to the offending language is specifically the may not assign section of that as well, so that a person who is who does commit a violent offense, if the district court were to use their discretion and determine that that individual is appropriate for veterans court, they may still be assigned into that.
But the distinction in this statute is between violent and nonviolent offense. And what the legislature said is, in the case of violent offenses, we're going to give to the district attorney the opportunity to veto this decision, or at least consent in it. What's wrong with that? Why does that violate the Constitution, the separation of powers? The legislature has made a distinction between violent and nonviolent offenses, and in the case of violent offenses, it has added this extra tether. What's wrong with that?
Your Honor, the issue here is that it violates the separation of powers.
In what way? What provision of the Nevada Constitution is violated?
Because the district attorney has the ultimate say in determining whether or not an individual who has committed a violent offense should even be eligible for the district court to use their discretion in order to determine whether or not they can be admitted into the veterans court program.
So the conflict constitutionally, you're saying, is that in the case of violent offenses, the judge's discretion is being circumvented by the legislative provision and the executive branch.
That is correct, Your Honor. What's been imposed is a complete bar where it's removing the entire potential sentence of the diversion program from the power of the district court. And that should be the issue here, and that's why this provision violates the separation of powers. So it's not...
Ms. Birch, I'm sorry, did you? I want to make sure you finish.
I just had one further question. What if the statute had said if the offense committed is violent, the defendant doesn't go to veterans court, period. All violent offenders are not eligible.
Then this would not be a violation of the separation of powers, Your Honor. And the court and the legislative branch could have done that, and they've shown that they are able to carve out specific distinctions like that. For example, with the mental health court statute, as well as even within 178A, the legislative branch has indicated that for violent offenses or for certain crimes, enumerated crimes, they're not...
So what was the legislative history for the veto power?
Your Honor, it's my understanding that this was brought up through Judge Green in the legislative history as Bill's purpose of this was a concession. And so I would just argue, Your Honor, that as a concession, this doesn't, it still violates the separation of powers. The whole purpose of the...
What did, you know what Judge Green said? What did he say when this was raised?
Your Honor, what he indicated is that the requirement for the district attorney to stipulate to the admission was included when the mental health court statute was established so that the Nevada District Attorney's Association would agree to the statute. And that's located in the Senate Committee on Judiciary, April 14, 2009, page 15.
And did the association also testify about this statute?
I don't recall, Your Honor. It's my understanding that that's, from my review, that was the only part of the legislative history that I could find regarding this veto provision. I would note that also contained in the legislative history is the notion that we really want to protect veterans and we want to provide this member of our society, and it's not just veterans, it's active members of the military as well, with the services, this therapeutic services in this court in order to overcome the specific issues that encompass being a veteran and being an active member of the military.
Well, but this deals with a specific carve-out. It's a carve-out of veterans who've committed violent offenses.
And, if, Your Honor, if this carve-out was allowing for the district court...
So what you're asking for in the severability argument is for this court to completely strike the carve-out in its entirety, not just the veto power, but everything in it, so that veterans who commit both nonviolent and violent offenses now go to veterans court.
And that is correct, Your Honor. The veto power provision that is in the statute, I believe that the clause includes that carve-out. And so if you look at the severability statutes and how you determine whether or not the clause is severable, you can, if you can remove that entire clause, then and the statute still remains, then the statute should still be held in effect. And in this case, if you take out that clause, including the violent offense provision, then the...
So at the end of the day, your point is that it's up to the district court to recognize that in violent offenses, some veterans shouldn't go
that is
to veterans court.
And that is our entire argument, is that it should be up to the discretion of the district court and not up to the whim of the district attorney. What's been provided is an improper legislation with no safeguards. And if I may briefly conclude, Your Honor.
Please do so.
As we've discussed, the violation of separation of powers occurs in this statute because the veto provision improperly invades the province of the sentencing court. The district attorney has no guidelines. There's no review. There's no chance for appellate review as to the denial of a person in veterans court. This court should be concerned with protecting the district court's discretion and their sentencing ability, and find that the veto power assigned to the district attorney is a violation of the separation of powers, including the may not assign a veteran into veterans court unless the district attorney stipulates, and find that that clause is severable and the rest remains. And if there's no further questions, I'd like to thank the court for consideration.
Ms. MacArthur, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. I don't think this case involves a deferred judgment at all because it ultimately leads to no judgment. There's no conviction, no sentence. That is the difference between a judgment that says your sentence is suspended and you're on probation with the condition that you go to Veterans Court. This is not the same thing. This is a termination of the prosecution without judgment. There is no sentence imposed, no probation is imposed, and ultimately the charge is dismissed without the consent of the prosecutor. I would want to mention severance. I agree that if it is severed, if the offending clause is severed, it would seem that you just can't do it. You can't send these people to Veterans Court at all.
Well, let me inquire, though. On page 9 of the court's order, the court said that the state agreed that if it found unconstitutional, you could strike the offending clause, and that would still permit the district court to determine, based upon all the circumstances, whether the offense involved the use or threatened use of force or violence. So there's still some discretion given to the judge with respect to a crime of violence. You can't go, but the court determines whether the offense that you're charged with constitutes a crime of violence within the meaning of the statute.
I think that if we are to sever these things, this court is going to be enacting legislation. This court is going to be enacting a statute that the legislature did not enact.
But you agreed below, the state acting, agreed that they could be severed, and this is what it would read. Is that right or not?
I don't think it is right, but I'm willing to be corrected on it. It's happened before. So if so, then I suppose I shouldn't be taking a contrary position. It wasn't me personally, so I don't recall. Oops.
Final word, Mr. MacArthur.
Pardon me?
Final word.
Goodbye.
Stand in recess. This matter is submitted. I thank counsel for their arguments as of this important matter.